In today's episode, we learn about nature's suction cups on the way to Spatula City. This is UHF. Okay.
$4.
You rented that.
It was
that.
Free. On.
Yeah, it was on Pluto.
Yeah.
I did not. Okay. $4 or commercials.
Ooh.
They weren't that bad.
That is the
Hey, the
question.
Commercials. The commercials were kind of good with what I watched. It kept showing that same Taco Bell ones. Like, I'm a musician. And I eat Taco Bell because
no,
I'm poor.
No, I would have immediately ordered Taco Bell. So.
Okay, first and foremost, the poor cannot afford to eat at Taco Bell anymore.
No.
It is like.
No.
You should see the new Taco Bell over by the Food City by me. It is so fancy. It has, like, granite walls, outdoor seating, the good one. And, like, when I order from it, they actually get my order right when there's, like, an old-ass one up the street. And, like, you would order, like, a quesadilla, and then somebody would show up with a bag of 6 bean and rice burritos with no cheese or anything. You're like, this is not what I wanted. And never one time get your exact order. But they know what they're doing at this fancy one.
It's got to be the granite walls.
Do they offer any of the special menu items that some Taco Bells offer? Like
the Cantina ones.
Yeah.
They have the Cheez-It thing, which it's like a giant Cheez-It with stuff on it.
Well, I've heard that you can get a real delicacy at one of them called the Twinkie Wiener Sandwich. Have you guys heard of this?
That made me think I was going to have a goddamn stroke just looking.
Well,
okay, was it?
Go ahead, JJ.
No, was it the sandwich or that he dipped it in milk afterwards before he took a bite?
Honestly,
coffee.
Was like, okay, that
oh, was it coffee?
A little bit better in my
yes.
veins.
He put the milk in the coffee and then dipped the Twinkie Wiener sandwich in it.
God. Oh, man.
In case you guys didn't know, today on Funsphere Movie Club, we're talking about UHF. Hi, I'm Josh.
I'm Harry Kipper. The most obscure reference ever.
Pretty much.
Fran Drescher, the only good part about this movie, and I got really excited when I saw David Bowie, and I was like, wait, that's not David Bowie. Well, the name, I mean.
It is a David Bowie, not that one.
Not the one I was hoping it was.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, like I said, today we are talking about 1989's UHF. Or internationally known as The Vidiot from UHF. It is an American comedy film starring Weird Al Yankovic, David Bowie, Fran Drescher, Victoria Jackson, Kevin McCarthy, Michael Richards, and let's just say a colorful cast of characters. This was... how do you really go about explaining it? Except that the film... follows George Newman and his wacky imagination as he goes from job to job until he lands the managing role at a local UHF station. And then more and more wackiness ensues.
Yep.
I think that's a pretty good summary of the plot. Okay. So, just like we do usually, we'll give you a little info. Critically panned, technically a financial success. When you make this movie with a budget of $5 million and earn back $6.1 million, you can call that a win, or like most things, you can call that a loss. But it is definitely a cult classic. This one even more amplified by the fact that the movie was out of print for many years. I don't know if you guys have ever been kind of a film collector or stuff like that. This originally came out on VHS, and then it went out of print for many years and didn't come back on DVD until 2002. And I can tell you, Shout Factory was the company that put it out, and you had to actually buy it online, and it was a very expensive DVD at the time. I know, because I bought two of them.
For what? To resell, or?
No, I bought one for me and one for a friend.
Then, gift. Okay, that's nice.
Guess you didn't use deep discount DVD.
No, I did not.
That's where I used to get all my DVDs.
Guess you didn't use.
Early 2000s.
Yep.
Don't return them to the red box.
Nope. Oh. And then, like I said, there was one other thing I'll just note. The 25th anniversary edition of UHF was put out on Blu-ray in 2014. And guess what? I got that one, too.
y'all love this movie, huh?
I do love this movie. So this was my suggestion. Probably surprising no one if I had to guess.
I thought it was Mike's for some reason.
I will say this. I definitely encountered it when I was very young. And I'm pretty sure I saw it on our local UHF channel we had here in Knoxville on Fox 43 back in the day. So I have, and I was one of those people, I did never had it on VHS, and the VHS prints are still kind of rare. They were one of the first things that kind of got viral on eBay back in the day. Like, we're talking, like, people were paying $200 to $300 for a VHS copy of this film.
I feel like I'm doing a podcast with Greg Turkington.
I don't know who that is, but
He's a movie buff. He did a special on AMC about Wizard of Oz. I think you should check it out.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. All right. So, just a quick question for the table. Who had seen this before I suggested it? I think, Mike, I know you had. JJ? Mm-hmm. Yep.
I have.
Samantha, you are the only newcomer to the film, correct?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Why don't you tell us your thoughts on it first and foremost?
I was kind of disappointed, honestly, because I liked the new Weird Al movie. It immediately wasn't, like, hilarious, but the more it sat with me, the more I was like, that movie was really funny. And this one, I think it was just, like, not my style of humor too much. But also I think the overarching issue was Michael Richards' character annoyed the shit out of me, and I wanted to hit him.
You didn't like Stanley Spadowski?
No, I hated his teeth, tooth acting with his fucking like fake teeth, and I hated him. I wanted those gangsters to kill him. I was worried about the animals as well on this one. Because it's an older movie, and I like saw them all. And, like, there's a baby lion in the cage and a fox. They had all like live animals just like on the back of that truck. And I was like, oh man, I don't know. I don't know about that. I mean, I know.
I don't think Weird
cages.
Al would let that happen.
I know, but I was still nervous.
You were nervous.
I know the turtle was fake that he threw up, but he was still like knocking on the real shell. That's rude. Turtles don't like that. It was fine. It, you know what? It actually reminded me a lot of, and this might have been another thing, it reminded me a lot of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, okay.
But I like Pee-wee so much more. Mm. So I think that kind of tainted it for me. I like Weird Al. I wish they had done more songs, honestly, because they just did the one. I always love to see Fran.
Yes.
I didn't think it was a bad movie. I thought it was nice. Like, I felt like it was a good watch. I think I expected to find it funnier, and I didn't find it super funny. Like, the newer one, I was a little more ridiculous. Maybe, I don't know. I think maybe he got the, I don't know what I'm trying to say. But, like at the beginning when the guy's outside the temple and just gets run over by a train, it's, like, it's almost, like, too on the nose of weird.
Okay.
Well, you gotta remember, it was the mid-80s.
Yes, that's another thing. Like, I'm thinking it's just, like, at the time, it was like, whoa, and now I'm like, well,
So I'm going to use this to interject to give you guys a little history of the film. So Weird Al and his manager is the guy who they wrote the film. And actually, Jay Levy is the director of the film. That's his manager. Yeah. So Weird Al, after his second album, they sat down and kind of wrote this film. And they tried to get it made for 3 years before Orion Pictures gave them the shot. They're like, okay, here's $5 million. And when it came out, and it came out against a murderer's row of other films. Y'all ready for this? So the month. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So it went out against the month it was released. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Lethal Weapon 2, Batman, License to Kill, Dead Poets Society, When Harry Met Sally, Do the Right Thing, and Weekend at Bernie's.
Those all came out in 1 month?
There was like a 2 month window, and all those came out.
That's insane.
Wow, what a time to be alive to be able to watch all of those in the theater.
How would you know which one to go watch?
Weekend at Bernie's.
And they didn't have the what was that thing they did a couple years back where you basically got to go to every movie for free?
Yeah, the movie pass thing. Yeah, there was no movie pass back then.
Can you imagine having that during that time
frame?
Oh, but for the 4D films.
But this is back in the day.
Don't ever watch a 4D film.
I was going to say, this was back in the day when movie theater tickets were not, like, super expensive. Like, a good new release at night was probably $5. So,
Minimum wage was also $2.75, too, or something. No, it's like
$4. Yeah.
I remember going to the WoW 7 when we lived in Illinois when I was, like, between 10 and 13. Like, my parents would just drop us off there. I would have a $20 bill, and I could get my ticket and snacks and a drink.
Yeah.
And still have money left over for the arcade, which I would blow all on the baseball game that would give you a free bouncy ball no matter what.
That's just a sound investment.
Yeah.
So you have fun, and you get a tangible item to take home.
Which you then take into the basement and throw as hard as you can to see how many times it'll ricochet.
Agree.
Like Spy Kids.
All right, so I have not seen the second Weird Al movie that you're talking about, the one that
liked it.
Daniel Radcliffe's in that, is that correct?
Yes, yes. Okay. It's his autobiography. It's all
okay.
True.
Yeah, except
especially the relationship with Madonna.
Yep, especially how that ends. It's true.
Okay. Okay, so maybe that's that. You did admit that does have kind of a tinges the movie for you a little bit, that you're like,
yeah, and I think also the Pee-wee comparison. I was like, it feels so similar for some reason. I don't know if it's because of his girlfriend and then just like how goofy it is, but like, it just does.
I'll just say this: I actually have the same thought. I also think it is very similar to the vibe that Pee-wee's was set up, where it had all the nostalgia to the stuff that would have been when the director was a kid and stuff like that. You had all the old sci-fi shows and stuff like that, and old campy movies in Pee-wee. You had the same type of stuff in this, but then you also had parodies of very common things. Okay.
Even their boss at the beginning, that big lady.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the ending, Philo and Large Marge, if you want to make that comparison as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. I did like when they flew away. Okay, I thought that I liked the very, very end, I thought was funny.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. You know what? I'm going to say, Mike, what did you think of this film?
Of course, I loved it. I have always been a big Weird Al fan. I actually didn't see the movie until maybe 10 years ago. So it was fairly recently. And I've only seen it, this will have been the third time that I've seen it. So it doesn't hold as much of a nostalgia thing, but I have appreciated it more every time I've seen it. It's just like a stupidly brilliant movie like Kung Pao, where it's yes. really, really dumb, but it's also really smart in the way that it's dumb.
Yes.
Like there are a bunch of laughs that it gives you that you were not expecting to to have.
Okay. Why don't you give me an example of one of those?
I mean, like the Kipper Kids scene, which is something that I didn't even notice the last two times, but for some reason I was obsessed with that, like, and I mean, it's what, 5 seconds
yeah.
of the movie, but it, like, I was like, who are those people? And went down this rabbit hole. Apparently one of the guys is married to Bette Midler. But they were like this duo
yeah.
that they did art installations is what they called their performances.
Yep.
But it was pretty fascinating.
Okay, now this is, I will say for this film, a lot of the actors involved, you know, because of the budget involved, these are actually like a lot of big fans of Weird Al and guys he was personally friends with.
Yeah, like contemporaries.
Yeah, exactly, that starred in this film. And I think the Kipper Kids might have actually been fans of his, so that's why they agreed to be in the film. Along with one of my personal standout characters for this film, Emo Phillips, as the shop teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, that was so gross.
But I agree with you, Mike. It definitely has those, like, little just moments that make you laugh. Like, the one that just caught me recently is, like, you know, the end of the telethon? There's this big biker guy that gets up and goes, "Hey, everybody, they're back!" And that's all he says, but the way he says it is so, like, Kung Pao, like, it cracked me up for some reason.
But it's almost got, like, like an airplane vibe, but better than an airplane, I think. Where, so, like the Rambo scene where he bites the bullet and then starts shooting. Yeah. But he only catches one bullet and it turns into, like, a million.
Yeah. He chomped it up.
So, funny enough, actually, Weird Al admits that airplane was a source of inspiration for this film.
I can see it.
Yeah. When they were writing it, definitely.
And this is the second movie that you all have talked about with people catching bullets with their teeth as well.
Oh, that was the first one.
It is.
Last Dragon.
Last Dragon.
Oh, right.
Yep, that was definitely, that was one of them.
If he only turned it into a machine gun like Weird Al did, it would have been a different movie. Yeah.
I bet 4 out of the 5 million in the budget went towards that bodysuit that he wore as Rambo.
I think it went to renting wear that exotic now. Animals.
I was going to say, I would think the budget is split between definitely the two big movie parodies and the early CGI music video.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's where most of the funds for the movie went to.
Because that was pretty much identical to the original, right?
Yeah, very close.
Yeah.
Very close. And I don't know, any of you guys ever watch the VH1 Behind the Music special of Weird Al?
Mm-mm.
Just
me. Okay. I don't. If I did, it was like 20 years ago.
Yeah. So I will tell you, the other funny thing about that song is that Mark Knopfler only agreed to let Weird Al parody it if he was allowed to play guitar on the song. So it's legit.
That's really cute.
Yeah. Mm. It's like he played it for both versions. Okay. So Mike loved
play
it.
Guitar.
Are you kidding me? Think about how, if you were a, well, let me ask you this, Mike, let's just say you somehow managed to make a pop song of some sort. How much of an honor?
Our opening theme.
Yeah. So, how much of an honor would you consider it if Weird Al reached out to you to parody it? Like,
oh, there's one.
I think it's better than being knighted by the King of England, personally.
that's now you have to think though. Like when he was first coming up.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people would just be insulted. Like, you wouldn't make fun of my song and then try to cash in on it.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things they got to is like, actually he always asked permission. The biggest beef he ever had was with Coolio. and that was more of a managerial mistake because, he apparently had to go through his manager. The manager said yes, but the manager didn't actually ask Coolio. And then so he, like, they had a big thing of, like, where he profusely, you know, apologized for the mistake. He's like, I would never make fun of someone's song that actually wasn't cool with it.
Wasn't Coolio with it.
Yeah, it wasn't Coolio with it. R.I.P. And another one I can tell you to think of, you know, so another little anecdote about this film is when this flopped, it put Al into a real bad place, actually. He was in a big funk creatively for 3 years until he heard a young up-and-coming band from Seattle called Nirvana. And he reached out to a young Kurt Cobain and asked to parody Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Which that's one that I was surprised about.
Yes, and Kurt Cobain considered it a great honor for Weird Al to cover his song. He said he's a freaking genius, of course. So, okay.
Yeah.
All right, JJ, tell me about your experience with the film.
I loved it. I loved it. And to the point, just I could not stop laughing from the Rambo scene on. I know that's at the end, but... Right when that happens, even to the point it's like, hey, come on, he's here, everyone's here. You're like, what is going on at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Because I think you have that, and I think my time's all messed up because you have probably 10 minutes before that they show the Gandhi 2.
Yes. So the guy that plays Gandhi 2 is the director Jay Levy.
And by that point you're already committed to the ride. It's violent, but there's no blood except for the shop teacher.
Yeah.
You've got a guy who's already been split in half, and then by the time you see Rambo and he's just blowing people up, I was like, oh, this is so good. This is the best.
Yes.
And I think I was reading about that a couple days ago, like how they were trying to give it a stronger rating because of all the violence.
Yeah.
But he's like, there's no blood, there's nothing. And then they started saying the dogs, like Raul when he was throwing dogs out the window.
Yeah.
And they were.
He was teaching them to fly. Well,
yeah. So
there's a lot of blood.
Yeah, even with that, I loved it. I loved it because it was a movie that if I couldn't watch violent movies when I was that young, I could then and just love every minute of it. Like, don't you know the Dewey Decimal System or the late book and cutting it in half?
Oh, I just love how well they nail the commercials for it. Like,
yes,
how similar. Like, Thursday nights are all this. Like, they were just like that.
Yeah, Spatula City.
Spatula City.
Spatula City.
Oh, yeah. And I was reading that billboard stayed up a few months past the movie's production, and people were getting off like, where's the Spatula City? Like, they really wanted to see Spatula City, and they were forced to take it down because the other businesses were upset telling people that there's no such thing as Spatula City.
Oh, my gosh.
There should be.
It would go out of business so fast.
Are you kidding me? I would keep that place in business. I would love to buy 9 spatulas at full price and get my last one for a penny. 10th one for a
How
penny.
Often, though?
Oh, like every month? I would have all the new spatulas.
Well, think about that transition when you add a new spatula to your drawer and you try to open it and it's stuck and you just ruined your entire...
Spatulas.
But, But and, yeah, I think the movie's fantastic. I don't think there's a single thing wrong with it. It does kind of feel like Pee-wee's Big Adventure, which I think is a better movie. But this movie's so fun in its own way. It feels like these were, could have been great ideas for songs that he had down the road, just couldn't make them work. Let's just turn it into a movie. And it's a good outlet to still continue and be creative that way. So, no, it's awesome.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask, like, what was everybody's favorite little vignette? Personally, I know it's very early in the film, but Crazy Eddie's auto is always going to get me the most. I've got green cars. I've got red cars. If you're not, somebody doesn't buy a car in the next 30 minutes, I'm going to club this baby seal. And the seal starts nodding its head.
It was a sea lion.
It was a sea lion. Yes, I agree. It's a little hard to get a seal cub in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where this was filmed.
But not a sea lion?
I mean, Dallas is only a little bit away. So
they both live in the ocean.
True.
I think the absurdity of Stanley Spadowski's game, you found the marble in the mashed potatoes.
You get a drink from the fire hose.
Fire hose. And just that entire sequence.
Yes.
Everyone's excited about the marble, and then that poor kid.
I like
that's how you know it's a good film, folks, is when you can't even tell what happens because you're laughing too hard.
I liked all the actors playing the parents and had to lift their or like move their legs so they didn't get hit by him on his little tricycle or whatever. Yeah. Whatever he was riding around, or a tractor, I don't remember. But I thought, they're not even acting. They're just trying to not get hit.
Gotcha.
I liked that.
You liked that part.
I just like the whole telethon bit there at the end. I'm sure it'll be different the next time I watch it. There'll be a different bit that I'm obsessed about.
I will say, Mike, when I first brought this up, you mentioned that this still holds up after like the second or third time. It is one of those films you notice something new each and every time. And I'm going to tell you guys my favorite character in the entire film is the bum. I love every last one of the jokes they do with that guy.
I liked the subversion of this.
Yes, I can't decide which is better, the change or the Rubik's Cube, as far as the joke goes for your expectations.
Yeah, I would never have expected that the bum just gives correct change.
Yes, he just needs change for a dollar and then puts the dollar right in his hand. Oh, and he's the hero of the film. That's the best part of everything.
Seems like the box office matches the film itself. You know,
yeah, pretty much.
$5 million to make. Did $6 million in the theaters, and he put him over. Maybe it was the bum who put the extra million.
What else
is the villain in?
He was a stage actor. Let me get his name for you.
He plays the perfect like 80s and 90s bad guy in a movie.
Let's see here. He was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. I don't think you would have seen that.
Nope.
Actually, it's really funny because he was a serious actor like Leslie Nielsen. They actually had a very remarkable, similar career path. Both were like very well serious actors. Let's see here. I'm trying to look up stuff for this guy. I mean, that's the guy we're talking about, by the way, is named Kevin McCarthy. Let's see here.
He was an early edition.
Oh yeah, he was in a bunch of shows. I don't think he had anything super.
I know what he's not anymore.
What? Alive.
The Republican Speaker of the House.
That's a different one. Let's see here.
So familiar.
I was gonna.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any of these.
He was in an episode of The Twilight Zone. Maybe that's where you're thinking of him from?
Maybe, yeah.
He looks nothing like him, but right now in my memory, Powers Booth is replacing him.
He was in Innerspace, Mike.
Innerspace, Mike?
What was he in Innerspace?
He was the main villain. He's the prime antagonist.
Gosh, I need to see that. I saw that movie in Oakland in 88. I don't know. Yeah, I think so.
He was apparently in a FMV game called the Pandora Directive.
Go on.
Yeah, that's literally all it says.
Oh, you know, Dragon's Dogma is FMV. Whenever really? You cook, it goes to like a real, it goes to like live, like not, well, like live action footage of meat cooking.
Why?
I don't know. I was like, did they put all their CG budget into this realistic meat, or is that like real? It's real. So that's a modern FMV game.
I'm looking at that list too, because Mike, I agree with you. It's like he should be in something.
I think he just looks familiar. Sometimes he that just, is the reason.
You know who he reminds me of is the bad guy in basketball.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's who I'm thinking of.
But it's not him. It's not him.
Just the way that they get mad is like they're the same person.
Apparently he was the, like, since he was a serious actor, he really enjoyed this role, but they had to do a lot of reshoots because he had a lot of trouble delivering his lines without laughing. Busting out laughing. Because
what
he's got
an amateur.
Well, I think it's one of those things, you're a professional, but you're a professional in drama, and getting comedy makes you laugh like everybody else.
What
I mean,
unprofessional loser.
Speaking of unprofessional, my favorite line of his is, I don't know how many times I've told those boys to not call chicks broads. That's just just the way he delivers that line is so good.
I wish Fran could have stabbed him.
So another fun thing about this film is that, like, so it was done in 89, obviously. And you see, like, all these actors in this film that went on to have such big television roles. Obviously, we have Michael Richardson becomes Kramer. Fran Drescher becomes the
Fran.
Nanny Fran. Yeah. And the bad guy, who here watched The Sopranos?
I've seen it. Well, I did stop at a certain episode.
So the main, I'll say the gangster one, the black-haired guy, that's mm-hmm. he plays a really big role in several seasons. Or is it several or one season of The Sopranos? He's Richie Aprile.
Richie Aprile.
Yep. So it's wild, and you keep looking at this.
Well, Victoria Jackson, she was on SNL at the time.
She was indeed.
I can't believe she passed away.
What? She died? I didn't know
that. Yeah, a while
ago. I did not know that.
Oh, wait. No, she didn't.
I was like,
who am I thinking of?
I was about to talk shit.
Isn't she the one?
Who am I thinking of?
I thought she was the one that got really, like, right wing. Am I thinking?
Did she?
May as well be dead. Who?
Who are you thinking of?
She was also on SNL. Oh my gosh, she was in a lot of stuff with Phil Hartman.
Yeah.
I'm going to pull up the IMDb for this movie, and we're going to silently look at the cast for the rest of this podcast episode.
Yeah. That was the thing I know her from, is that she went...
Terry. She's right-wing?
Yeah, she's super right-wing.
Oh, then she should... Oh, yeah, she's in a movie called Saving Faith. Andy's, oh my god, yeah, Andy's Rainbow. You can tell.
Yeah, well, I mean, people get to make their own decisions. That's the thing about this country.
People
we may not
make
agree
their
with
own
it.
Decisions.
But she has the right to say what she wants.
And I have a right to make fun of it.
You do. Comedy and parody has been protected by the Supreme Court.
I remember.
Jan Hooks. That's who I was thinking of. Jan Hooks.
Okay. Gotcha.
Samantha, you'll probably remember from 30 Rock.
I'm scrolling through this. Kevin McCarthy does look a little bit like Powers Booth. That's why I was thinking of him. Just without the teeth.
Gotcha.
JJ, you had something you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, what was up with Terry's birthday dress? Did you...
Yes! It looked like I know it was the 80s, but it was like, did they put her like in a big princess costume for some reason or something
that? Yeah, it was her birthday. She's the birthday princess.
And where did they go? Like Ponderosa? Where were they eating dinner?
Probably whatever. Oh, Jenna's mom. That's mm-hmm. Jan Hooks.
Yeah, it definitely stuck out for some reason.
It was huge.
It was very big. I mean, I know that, the thing was, this wasn't even the suit jacket that had the shoulder pads in it that was popular at the time. But no, this was just a massive, massive dress.
Well, and the idea of him not showing up. You're dressed up?
Yep.
And then you have to break up with your boyfriend in that dress at a payphone. I mean, that's just so, so, so crazy. Just seeing her in that dress, breaking up, and then, you know, slowly coming back. But I don't know. I even laughed at the dress because I was like, why? Why is she wearing it?
Actually, it really bothered me how long it took him to, even ask what time it was.
Well, without somebody punching through the wall to show him a watch, yeah, it was kind of out of place. I agree.
But it's the best time to look. I mean, yeah.
7:30. That's...
I was like, did I have the day wrong? I thought I was mistaken, that I misunderstood which day it was supposed to be. Like, as soon as he fell asleep, I knew he was going to miss it. But then it was like 20 minutes of something else before he even thought about it. Also, when she came home and her apartment was like filled with balloons and stuff, I was like, that's creepy.
Okay.
I would be not happy with this. Someone I've broken up with breaking into my apartment and putting a bunch of stuff in there.
How romantic do you want your Weird Al? Like, I think that's perfect for him.
So yeah. Actually, funny enough, Siskel and Ebert at the time, that was one of their main criticisms is like, yeah, this guy's funny, but he's not a leading man. And I was like, it's Weird Al. What do you expect?
No, it's fine that he has like a love interest. I just thought it was so creepy that he broke into her house when she wasn't there, when she's not even taking his calls. Like,
I was going to say, Samantha, have you ever seen Twins?
What is this? No.
Okay, because Danny DeVito has similar...
yes, I have seen that.
He does a similar thing, but with flowers instead of bullying. Yes, agreed. But actually, during the writing and the casting, they were like, wait, do we need to develop the character that Victoria Jackson plays? And they're like, not really, because it's not really about being a romance. And check out the other actresses that she beat. It was Ellen DeGeneres.
Great. That would have been great.
And Jennifer Tilly.
That's too much. No, wow. Too close to Fran. Too similar.
Too similar, huh? I gotcha. Well, does anyone else have anything to say about this just fantastic film?
Are you guys going to tune in to Bowling for Burgers tonight at 9?
Absolutely not.
I don't know. I
got to go back to my sister's house. I can't watch no Bowling for Burgers. I got to let those dogs outside again. They have to go to the bathroom.
What about My Three Mutants?
or Town Talk. I heard
honestly, the commercials on that channel are way too long. There's no way.
The funny thing is they're like, and I think JJ mentioned it. They were like very real for the time. Like they parodied them pretty straight on.
They were great parodies, but I'm playing along in this universe and saying I will not watch this channel because the commercials are 5 minutes long each.
So their ads reminded me a lot of the stuff that Tim and Eric would do.
Yeah.
Like they're really?
Very, very inspired by the local network commercials.
Yeah, so funny you should mention Tim and Eric, because there was a web series called The Real UHF in 2009, and it starred Dr. Demento, Neil Hamburger, and Count Smokula.
Funny you should mention Neil Hamburger and not know who Greg Turkington is.
The series was the brainchild of Zach Wolk, an intern on Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great job. Huh. So,
great job.
It definitely kind of inspired the great show job. Around.
Great job.
Both ways. Everybody's giving thumbs up. It's great.
Great job.
Okay.
Good job.
All right. Well, I just hope that everyone will watch this film after we've talked about it. Like, I hope everyone always watches all the films we talk about, but
mm-hmm. I think... Well, you don't have to watch Old Boy or whenever this other one comes out, the last one.
No, you don't have to necessarily watch those, but of all of them, I hope that people watch UHF, and I hope that people watch Kung Pao. In the last
oh
Dragon.
Wait, Wild at Heart would have come out by the time this comes out, so you don't have to watch Wild at Heart.
There you go. Correct. Yes, Wild at Heart has come out.
By the time this is out.
All right. Well,
we'll just so everybody knows, don't worry about your laundry. Forget about your job. Just crank up the volume and yank off the knob.
We've got it all on UHF.
That's inappropriate.
Oh, definitely.
Oh goodness.
So, I was going to bring up Raul because, you know, he died in the middle of shooting that. But you were like, anything else? And I was like, yeah, we were talking about developing characters and they wanted to develop him even more. But he
was he the crazy pet guy?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. He got hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, yeah, that's sad.
Yeah. He's like, anything else? Well, did you know about Raul?
I was thinking about it at the same time. I was like, so many people are not going to know who Trinidad Sylvia was. To begin
well,
with.
You can put it in there.
Okay.
After the you can make that happen.
I
magic,
can.
Yes. Editing.
The magic of editing. Yes. So real quick, the film was dedicated to Trinidad Sylvia Jr. The character he played was Raul, the pet guy, who let us all know that turtles are nature's suction cup. And again, he died during filming. He was supposed to play a really big role, actually, in the telethon, but he passed before any of that was shot. So they decided not to recast or use body doubles or something like that, and they dedicated the film to him.
I wonder if the dogs were supposed to fly at the end or something.
It doesn't say, but that would have been nice if he's like, here's my flying poodle, and it actually worked.
Yeah, like after they get the money, like he just throws the dog and the dog flies away or something. Like,
oh, yeah, no doves, just a bunch of flying poodles.
Like flying poodles. That's great.
Yeah, because I think he had one of the best lines. And I'm paraphrasing here, but it's after he threw the poodle out, he's like, they don't always get it the first time.
Yeah. Yep. There's a pile of them on the ground, too. And, of course, badgers. We don't need no stinking badgers.
We don't
badgers.
Need no stinking badgers.
Which is, of course, a parody of a line from Blazing Saddles. Okay. All right.
Bye again.
Bye again.
Bye here.
Bye.